Hey folks, I'm Simon Ward, your host for this weekly podcast. Over the years, I've come to realise that achieving one's goals as a triathlete is not possible unless you support this with good nutrition, excellent recovery, develop a robust framework through mobility and strength training, and have a happy, balanced work and family life. Each of these elements contributes to our race day performances and gives us the best chance of turning those dreams into reality. Each week, my goal is to introduce you to the experts and thought leaders in each of these fields to help you squeeze the most from your life and enjoy racing success. So, without further ado, let's crack on with this week's guest.
Well, welcome back, listeners. I've got a fantastic guest today, one of my Yorkshire bros. I've come over to his crib here. He only lives around the corner from me. So welcome to the show, Alistair Brownlee.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Outside, you had your race bike there, just fresh back from Nice, still covered in sweat and sports drink, but it looks like it's going straight back in the bag.
Yeah, I literally arrived back last night. The kind guys at Tri-Bike Transport take it around, literally around the world for me at the moment. It got back yesterday, and so today's Thursday. I'm packing it to go fly to Arizona tomorrow.
So that's a bit of warm weather training. Is it Scottsdale you're going to?
Yeah, I'm going to Scottsdale. I wanted to go somewhere, it really feels like it the last few days, doesn't it? I think autumn's hit us here in Yorkshire, so it gets harder to train anyway, shorter days. Obviously, the heat is going to be a major issue in Kona for me, so I wanted to go away. Thought dry and hot. Scottsdale looks like a great place. So I'm going there for about 2.5 weeks and then heading to Kona.
Dry and hot, though. Kona's a bit more humid than that.
Yeah, my experience, two things. My experience of being in the humidity is that it's really hard and draining to do it for too long, and you can't get some of the training in that you'd like to do because it's pretty hot 24 hours a day in humid places, so you can't even escape from it. And then the other thing, my kind of knowledge of preparing for the heat and the scientific stuff says that as long as your core temperature is getting pretty warm, you're getting the adaptations you need. So I'm hoping that I'll be okay, and even then the 10 days I've got in Kona before the race should be enough for me to adapt to those specific conditions.
Cool. Well, let's rewind a little bit. I can remember when you first joined our little triathlon squad back when you were 14. Johnny tagged along as your little 12-year-old brother.
2002, nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah, a long time. So you've come a long way since then. It's been an impressive journey.
Yeah.
But even back then, I think I was doing Ironman races and you were probably asking me what I was doing and saying you fancied it. So here you are. It's taken you a while to get around to it.
Yeah, well, I think, as you know, I've done triathlon for a long time and known about triathlon for a long time. Even as a 8-9-year-old when I was doing my first triathlons, I had my uncle who was doing Lanzarote and doing various Ironmans. And so obviously knew about what was going on with Kona, with the kind of legends and stuff. So absolutely knew about it. And then I joined whatever it was called then, the academy or whatever it was called. And obviously met you and Jack and stuff. So knew more about Ironman and the sport. And I think between then and, well, now, they obviously to do was Olympic distance and ITU racing. So that's very much what I focused on. But in the back of my mind, Ironman, but specifically Kona was always there.
You didn't do too bad at the shorter distance, did you really?
No, I don't think so. I had a good innings, as Jeffrey would say.
Sir Jeffrey. Yeah. I think that's what made me laugh, actually, the other day when he got that knighthood, because, to be quite honest, in Yorkshire, everybody's called him Sir Jeffrey for years. He once bestowed honorary Yorkshireman on me when I worked at Yorkshire Cricket Club.
He
said to me, I know you're not from Yorkshire, lad, but that's good enough for me, so that's a Yorkshireman. Oh, thanks, Sir Jeff. Yeah. So I felt like I'd been awarded a cap. it's always sort of seemed to me like you're a bit of a historian of the sport. You don't just do the sport and sort of ignore what's gone on before. So I guess you're probably aware that this year's the 30th anniversary to that great Mark Allen and Dave Scott race. Mm-hmm. Were they heroes of yours when you grew up in triathlon? Or did you, because I know you also started out fell running with Bingley Harriers. So I guess that some of the athletes in that particular sport might have been inspiring to you.
Yeah, I think probably by the time I was actively following the sport, we're talking about the late 90s, and I was definitely aware about Kona. I was definitely more aware about probably Mark Allen and Dave Scott, because Mark Allen did a bit of the Olympic distance racing. I think he was world champ in 89 or something.
He was, he beat Glenn. Yeah, Glenn was second.
Second, yeah. So, and then obviously we're talking about the late 90s in Avignon. then we're talking about the late 90s and it suddenly, the whole sport became about the Olympics, especially in my eyes.
Yeah.
So in the lead up to Sydney and yeah, obviously being a Brit, it was about really about Simon Lessing with the potential for, I guess, Spencer Smith at the time and Andrew Johns and then Tim. So, yeah, I think I definitely was more following the Olympic side of the sport that you could follow, you know, going back that far. And we're going back, I think it's before internet then. So it's not like you could just watch Kona on Facebook or whatever. If you wanted to know what went on Kona, I think you had to wait for 220 magazine to come out and read about it there a few weeks later.
I remember seeing my first exposure to Ironman was watching the Julie Moss thing. That was 1982 thing when she crawled across the line, you know, and there people willing are there but not able to touch them. And then obviously the 1989 Iron War. I watched a video of it the other day, you know, it's this, you can find it on YouTube. And there's a whole story about it come out this year about some of the behind the scenes stuff, which is quite interesting when you get a chance to speak to Dave and Mark, as I'm sure you will in Kona. You should ask them a little bit about that, some of those untold stories that weren't even in the book. But even then, you had to wait for some sort of late night showing of the NBC broadcast. And of course, because they don't do the official one until November, it never really got over here until January. Of course, now, a bit like watching you in Nice at the weekend, you can watch it on Facebook Live as it's happening on the big screen, which is great.
Yeah, I think I've been pretty surprised how good the coverage of Ironman is. You know, I think obviously coming from the short course background, and it's all designed about being consumer friendly and good for spectators and stuff. I think the coverage for long distance racing, I think, can be pretty good. And yeah, when you watch back some of the stuff like from the weekend in Nice, where you just got the scenery as well and everything around it, it's almost more like watching the Tour de France than it is triathlon. You know, with going past this castle or whatever. I don't know if they're talking about vineyards on the triathlon commentary like they do on ITV4 when they go on the Tour de France, where they had a particularly good bottle of wine the night before from the vineyard they're just passing, but probably not. Maybe one day, if I ever get to the commentary booth, I'll try and liven it up a bit with some of these anecdotes.
I think Michael Lovato and Didi Griesbach do a great job. They're very knowledgeable, obviously. They've raced on the pro circuit for quite a number of years, but they're both American. So they probably didn't have that much knowledge, and they've, because it's Facebook, they've got all the Facebook comments coming in. So they're doing the standard Ironman stuff, and then they're sort of responding to Facebook comments and, you know, really just commenting on what they think they're seeing in your performance and the other athletes. But I think they do a good job. As you know, I've done a bit of emceeing myself at your events, and it's a hard job to talk for 5 or 6 hours and keep everybody entertained.
Yeah, I've only done relatively short races, Super League commentary, so, and they only last about 30 minutes, so it's not so bad. I think commentary, yeah, I haven't watched too much from this last weekend, but definitely watching the short course commentary, it has to be someone really current and someone with a really good understanding of what's going on to kind of lighten it up for the people who are watching, because, you know, without that, well, maybe it's just me and a relative expert watching it, but normally when you watch a triathlon race, you just think you're missing literally 95% of what's going on here.
No, I'm with
and
you on
that. And only
getting
5%, which is a shame, because I think even Olympic distance racing, especially a half Ironman and Ironman, it's a lot of time to talk and fill. And but a lot of that could be filled with real expertise of the interests and the intricacies of what's going on.
When we talked about cycling there, you know, since they've had Dave Miller on,
whatever
you think about Dave's past, he's really insightful about what's going on in the peloton, why one team will be chasing back, why two seemingly rival teams will be working together against a third one, what's happening on the climbs.
Absolutely,
and why they're all sitting in there and not attacking. And bless him, Sean Kelly, he's enthusiastic, but he's from 25 years ago, and I just think they need to move him on now. But
yeah, I do think it's very time relevant, because the sport changes quite quick, relatively quick. And I think it has to be someone relatively current who's got a good understanding of what's going on, but still just, you know, maybe one level of removal from the actual people racing. I think that, you know, it's quite hard sometimes when I've done it, like if you're commentating on Johnny and guys that you know personally and that you race against, because you're almost too close to the action as well. So it's just having that little bit of removal, but at the same time being really current with a good understanding anyway.
Mm. Well, let's get back to talking about Ironman, because of course, you know, whilst you're going to the big party in a few weeks, it's not so long ago that you were doing your very first Ironman over in Cork in Ireland. The weather was more like Yorkshire weather there, wasn't it? A bit rough.
Yeah. Cork was in the end of June, I think. Yeah, end of June. And I kind of did it almost last minute decision, although I had always had it in the back of my head that I was probably going to do an Ironman. I entered it, got there, was stood there at the start of the race, and then decided to cancel the swim. And I was like, oh, flipping hell. I wanted to do an Ironman. You know, literally, I was excited to do an Ironman, and now I'm not going to do an Ironman. So that was a bit of a shame. But, you know, I was there. I wanted to qualify for Kona. So I was like, well, you know, you still just got to get around and win and not hurt yourself in any way. And then it changed. So they decided to stagger the start. I was like, okay, that's fine. But and stagger the start. So I was basically the last of the kind of decent pros to go off, which meant that I hardly saw another pro for the 4.5 hours on the bike, which felt quite lonely. But at least I felt at home. It rained constantly and the roads over there were slow and relatively bumpy and up and down and round corners. So it's very much like Yorkshire roads. Got off and ran and managed to catch Brian McChrystal, who was in front of me for most of it, and win the race. So I enjoyed it more than I thought. I think everyone has bad patches in races. Towards the back end of the bike, I was a bit like, I've just had enough of riding my bike. Yeah, you know, I just want to get off my bike. And then the back end of the run was a bit of a struggle, but apart from that, it was okay.
There will be a lot of people listening to this going, oh, thank goodness, it's not just me that feels like I've just want to throw the bike in the hedge. Yeah. But I've got, well, go back to right to the start then. So you're still on the line. They cancel the swim. You haven't written to Ironman Journey, have you? Asking whether, can I still call myself an Ironman if I've only done the bike and the run?
No, I haven't. Loads of people and a lot of my mates were like, oh, you still haven't done an Ironman? Like, you know, when are you going to actually do an Ironman? But yeah, I don't know. The thing is, what I point out is it actually would have been a lot easier for me that race if there was a swim. So yeah, I don't. I mean, swimming around for now doesn't really take a lot out of me, and it would have meant that I was in front of everyone else, so I think it would have been easier.
It was quite rough though, wasn't it? So perhaps you would have been the only person looking forward to swimming there.
It was rough and it was cold. And I think one of the things about Ironman is they treat everyone the same. And that means you almost, you have basically got to treat a pro like me the same as you were treating someone doing one for the first time, just trying to finish where the swim cutoff is 2:20 or something, is it? Yeah, so.
Around that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very different for someone like, you know, if you're swimming along pushing and you get out in 50 minutes and you're generating quite a lot of heat, than if you're, I don't know, people swimming breaststroke for most of it and in whatever the water was, 13 degrees and the chop for over 2 hours. That's, if someone said do that, I wouldn't fancy that myself either. So, yeah, I completely understand the decision.
One of the first races I ever did, in fact, it was the first Ironman, I was chatting to, I think Brian Rhodes was there actually. I don't know if you know Brian, he was a good Kiwi triathlete, but met this guy at the after party, and he was from Australia, and he was talking about how the pros mixed in, and he'd been at the after party and he'd done a 15-hour Ironman, and he bumped into Greg Welsh, who was one of the legends at that time, wasn't he? And Greg said to him, oh, how did you go, mate? And he said, oh, only 15 hours. He went, wow, that's almost twice as long as I was out there, buddy. That's some going. And he said, I couldn't believe that Greg Welsh was giving me props for being out there 15 hours. And he was really interested. But actually, what you've just said there is quite significant, because being out there for 15 hours still takes a fair amount of endurance, doesn't it? And I think the age groupers think the pros don't realise this, but I think actually most of them do.
Yeah, I think one of the things about triathlon, but especially Ironman, is that it's achievement for anyone to finish it. Actually, whether you're pro in whatever the record is, 7:40, you finish it in 7:40, or you finish it in 16 hours, 59 or whatever, you still finished an Ironman. And I think there's got to be some respect for that. And I think that's probably, you know, if we're talking between us, the biggest change that we've seen in triathlon in those 20 or whatever, 30 years for you, is that You know, even back when I started triathlon, most people are like, what's triathlon? And they don't have a clue what it is. And you fast forward a bit, people know what it is. And fast forward a bit more, people know you can kind of do one. And I think most people, if you actually talk to them on the street now, you know, the majority of the general public in the UK would say, yeah, I know what a triathlon is. And I kind of got an idea that I could do one if I wanted to, and completing one would be a massive achievement. And then do a sprint distance or a super sprint and then Olympic or whatever. But yeah, I think that's been a massive change in psyche, you know, that people could enter 5K for charity and now they actually think they can enter a triathlon for charity. And I think that's brilliant for the sport.
Yeah, and I think you know, you're being quite humble there, because I think you and Johnny have had a lot to do with that. British two brothers winning gold and bronze at the home Olympics. Yeah, we were training in Mallorca. There was a group of us. We're staying at this hotel. 9 o'clock, we go outside. There's a bar by the pool. Everybody's meeting to go on the bikes. There's these guys sat there having the beers at 9 o'clock in the morning. They were from Yorkshire, by the way. They were from Doncaster. And he said, what are you lads doing then? I said, oh, we're cycling. He said, are you triathletes? And one of the lads said, yeah, yeah, we are. He says, do you know them Brownlee brothers? And then somebody said, yeah, he does actually. And he says, I love them lads. They're great, aren't they? From Yorkshire, proper Yorkshire lads. So that's the effect, because those people, those guys weren't triathletes, but they knew about triathlon because of you. So
yeah, well, I think I like to see it. We've definitely been on the wave, you know, maybe the crest of the wave, but there's been a lot of other stuff that's gone on around it. And some of that is just pure luck, you know. I think people being active, people being more into sport, the spread of clubs, more events, etc. And I know it's chicken and the egg to some extent, but yeah, I think London had a massive impact. But yeah, we also have to remember that we were flipping lucky that in our prime, as in our early 20s, we had a home Olympics. And yeah, for sure, you've still got to be good enough and train and go and win it. But yeah, that Olympics could have been somewhere else and it could have been much less relevant.
Well, like a lot of things that happen in the world, timing's everything, isn't it? You know, there was probably guys who thought about the internet in the 70s, but it took until, you know, the processing of computers and all that until the 90s before it took off.
Yeah.
So timing's everything. So you've done Ironman Ireland, two thirds of an Ironman in Ireland. So I guess you haven't got the tattoo yet either.
No, I think it was more like 99, 10% than two thirds, but
yeah. And going back to that whole thing about doing the Ironman, I guess being from Yorkshire, the faster you do it means that each minute costs you more money. So you'd probably want to do it a bit slower.
Yeah. Oh, it's the other way around for me, isn't it? Because it's the longer it is, the less your prize money per minute.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Good thinking. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like working half wages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's fast forward then. So after that, you go. You did a couple of short distance races, didn't you, between doing that and going to Nice, and you also went back to Ireland before Nice to do the Dunleary.
That was before then. So I started my season with I did 70.3 in Marbella, which didn't go great because I had a bit of a problem with my bike. But still, I came second. I then did a World Cup, the sprint distance that I won in Italy, won the European ITU champs in Holland. Then raced in Leeds the week after that. That didn't go so well. I was a bit ill.
Yeah, you didn't look good on the run. I think you said you were going to stop and have some of my beer, didn't you?
It was really upsetting that, because I'd won the European champs the week before. I was kind of in great shape and thought it was good. And that didn't go well. So anyway, then Cork was a few weeks after that. I did that, enjoyed that. Took a little while to get over Cork. And then was away basically training for the 70.3, and then did Ireland, Dunleary as a warm up, and then been and raced in Nice this last weekend.
You quite like Ireland, don't you? It's not too dissimilar to being in Yorkshire.
Yeah, it's like Northern England. I like it. It's a really easy trip for me because you just hop across on the plane from Leeds Bradford, 40-minute flight into Dublin. It's chilled. I got some good friends there, and one good friend in particular is good at supporting me in the races. So that's absolutely fantastic. And it just so happened that the timing of the races was great, to be honest.
Okay, let's talk about Nice then. So that was last Sunday for you.
We're a few days after it now. It went okay till about 5K into the run. I think the swim was pretty much perfect to me. The bike was good, you know. As soon as it started getting the hilly bit, I started splitting it up and working hard, and ended up with there's three of us coming down the descent, and that's kind of where the race was really, really kicking off, because we ended up with a big gap to everyone behind us. And then out onto the run, I felt really good for the first 5 or 6K. But yeah, it's so easy in hindsight. I just wish I'd taken it a bit steadier, got a bit more water involved, a bit more energy. Because, you know, I think run wise, I was in the shape to run sub 67 kind of, you know, half marathon pace. And I basically muscled through 70 minutes. And I was, if someone said it's 5K or 6K, yeah, you can finish now, I would have collapsed across the line and gone, yeah, race done, I'm absolutely knackered, I'm done.
I'll give you half prize money if you finish here.
Yeah, so anyway, so the last 15K weren't particularly fun for me. But yeah, it came second, and that's still a great result at a world champs, I guess. But yeah, it's a shame because I wanted to win, and I felt probably if I'd been maybe a bit more sensible and with some hindsight on board, I feel like I probably still could have won.
So there's a couple of things there. I mean, traditionally, you've come off in the front pack or out on your own in WTS races, and you've trained to run hard and try and sort of really shake off or at least sort of make the others suffer in those first 2 or 3K. And I know that's how you like to race. Race in the front, give it everything, and if it's not good enough, then that's fine, but not hold back anything and try and come strong later. So are you having to learn a whole new racing style?
Yeah,
you're doing longer distance.
For sure, for long distance, you basically can't race like that. You've got to race conservatively, more conservatively. I mean, you can still look quite aggressive, but still be conservative at the same time. I think I've done a lot of training, obviously, to run at pace and be efficient at pace rather than just run as fast as I can. I still don't think the speed that I ran the first 4 or 5K at in Nice was unreasonably quick. I just think a lot of it was the bike was, you know, obviously way harder than any other normal 70-point freestyle of race. And because of the uphills and downhills and not the flats and not the fact that, you know, normally you're basically for 2 hours kind of looking at your power meter and every 15 minutes or 10 minutes you can drink and it's really, you know, very easy to chunk up and structure in terms of your nutrition. That was very difficult, and I probably just didn't have enough on board, maybe.
You look like you were on that hill, the main hill, going up to the top of the col. You look like you were turning over a pretty fast cadence there, faster than normal. Is that something you've been working on?
No, not really. I think just when I climb, I probably climb with in a bit of a lower gear and pedal up, have a quick cadence. Whereas when you're on the flat and you're trying to push out power, it's quite hard to do that on a high cadence. So probably pushing a little bit of a bigger gear, so that's probably the difference. If I was normally just climbing on a road bike or something, it'd be quite high cadence, I think.
Yeah. I know you spent a bit of time with Sky, didn't you, a couple of years ago? Is that something you've picked up from them? Because a lot of the Sky guys particularly seem to, and Froome definitely seem to pedal quite
high. Yeah, no, not necessarily. I think, you know, a lot of the cycle coaching and stuff, people have contact with, it's a very individual thing, you know. Even in Sky, if you look at Froome, quick, but Geraint and even Bernal, not mega high cadence riders. So especially Geraint Thomas, he's pretty slow. He rides big gear. So yeah, I think it's a very individual thing. And it's kind of, it's what you're comfortable with.
Would it be fair to say that Nice was your sort of main target for the year in terms of victory and the one you really wanted for this year?
Yeah, Nice was the target for the year. I trained well for it, been at altitude training for it, and you know, felt like it was a great course for me to perform on. Kind of seeing Kona as a bit of a bonus after that, a bit of a learning experience, and chance to go and learn and race at the same time. But that said, you know, I think once I'm on the course, I'm obviously going to give it my all and race to the best of my ability as well.
Yeah, I mean, clearly you knew quite a few of the guys that were racing in Nice. Were you surprised at Gustav Iden's run speed? It's not like he come from nowhere. He's run fast before, hasn't he? He did that really fast, second fastest run in Bahrain late
last
year.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's one of the top runners on the ITU circuit now. You just don't see him a lot because he swims normally pretty poor. So he's either down or has to ride through the field to get there. I think in Lausanne the week before he was fourth. Fourth in the test event. He's got other World Series top three, so yeah. I mean, I knew he'd be good. I knew he was light to climb well. I actually thought Blumenfeld would struggle a bit, to be honest. So when I was descending, and I knew Rudy von Berg came past me, I knew he was, and I looked behind, and I knew and I wasn't surprised. Gustav, I knew then it was going to be tough because I knew he'd be a solid competitor.
Mm. Quite a few Kona rivals in that field as well. Keenly seemed to go well. I know Seb's been to Yorkshire, hasn't he? He was swimming down Offaly last year.
Yeah. I've got to know Sebastian pretty well. He's good fun. He went well. I think he's in a really good place for Kona. You know, he seems his biking and running solid. I was telling him after he needs to work on his swim a bit, but he knew that already. So, and then the other side of it, you know, some of the other Kona guys like Langer, absolutely nowhere. So, I think it just shows how specific a race Kona is.
I was chatting with Elliot Smales the other morning, and he finished two places ahead of Langer, and he said he rode past him on the hill, just like and he didn't really show any interest in pairing up and riding as a, you know.
Yeah, I think they were over 10 minutes down, maybe even more off the bike, yeah. So massive amounts of time. But yeah, I think that's the, Kona is a very specific race. One thing about, for me, that I've seen at 70.3 world champs level as opposed to any other 70.3 is it's a completely different beast. You know, if any other 70.3 for me, you swim, you get on the bike, you race your own race. You can basically sit at the watts you want to sit at, just focus on pedaling those watts, keeping it as smooth as you can and keeping your head down to be aerodynamic and get off and run whatever you want to run. You know, that's basically it. At 70.3 level, at the world champs level, you know, it's not quite ITU tactics, but it almost is because of the advantage you get in the group compared to out of the group. So it's a completely different race. And I think Kona's like that compared to every other Ironman. It's maybe not a true reflection of swim bike running.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to watch Kona from the pier last few years. So you see them all, you see everybody, you can see them coming back down the, just down by the side of the pier, last 200 metres. The groups have been bigger. Coming into T1 last year, there must have been 13 or 14 people came out together. And whereas before they'd be jogging through, now they're sprinting through and it is like a WTS race. You've got that 10 miles around town where everybody's jostling for position. But once you get on the highway, if you're not up at the front, you've got an awful lot of power to lay down to get up there. And you know, I know it's not a drafting race like you're used to, but you've still got to be in a position to cover those breaks. And there's been some people who just got out of place and ended up burning the matches right there and then trying to get to the front. So you're right. I suspect that you'll be near the front of the swim anyway, so it shouldn't be an issue for you. But I think talking about Patrick Langer, I mean, you know, he's had three great races in his life. Kona 2017, 2018, 2019. Yeah. So he seems a bit like Lassie Viren. You remember Lassie Viren? Did nothing in between winning two golds in 74 and then did the same in 78. I suppose.
Like many great athletes are like that, to be fair. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. I suppose, I mean, you've got two Olympic gold medals. I suppose you'd if you hadn't got them, you'd trade them for all the world championships and other victories you'd have, would you?
No way, no.
You wouldn't know what I mean is if you haven't got
I trade everything I had for two of them.
In Kona terms, you'd trade all of the Ironman races for that victory. Yeah. So if you can peak on that day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of it is about peaking and being at your best on that day. And part of it is about how the race turns out. You know, if it gets raced aggressively in the first 10 miles, and that won't be by me, by the way, because I'm going to try not be too aggressive. But I think it could take a lot of people out of the race almost immediately.
Mm. I suppose the other thing is as well that the speed that you and Ben Canute and Rudy were putting in up the hill there meant that if anybody had come out of the swim 2 or 3 minutes down on you and weren't within 5 minutes getting off the bike, in order to beat you guys, they'd have had to run like somewhere between an hour and five, and for most people that's beyond them.
And
then you wonder, well, if they realise that's it, just put in a solid training day, have less fatigue and then focus on what's coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, quite possibly. But I think, you know, up to the top of the hill, I don't think anyone would have gone any, you know, I think everyone was going as hard as they could.
Okay, well, as you say, you're heading off to Arizona for some warm weather, and then it's beginning of October, you're going over to Kona?
Yeah, going to Kona itself about 10 days before. I got kind of 2.5 weeks in Arizona to get some training in the heat, get some long days in, some long runs, and trying to get a bit fine-tuned and prepared for Kona itself, which I'm really looking forward to be honest. Obviously, it's a very new and kind of exciting prospect for me at the moment, running for over 2 hours and doing some of those long rides and stuff. So, yeah, I feel I think the main thing is, especially coming off last week, but this whole season, the body's good, you know, absolutely injury-free, like really healthy, and just going out and enjoying running and training. So that's like the main thing for me. And then, kind of looking past that, I'm just going to enjoy the new challenge of training for it.
Yeah. First time, it'd be the first time you've done a full 3.8K swim then, or have you done those? I mean, obviously you train, yeah. You know, most swim sessions are 4K, but that's intervals, isn't it, that you do at the pool?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever swum 3.8K. I don't know. I don't think so. That's the bit I might live to regret these words, but I'm not worried about the swim. I'm pretty confident the swim's going to be fine. And probably, you know, 120K on the bike is going to be absolutely fine as well. It's after that, I think it might start getting a bit tough.
Well, you haven't, given the fact that you know, as you said, Ireland was condensed into a bike and a run, you truly are an Ironman virgin going into this. And there won't be many people, even amongst the age groupers and those who've got lottery spots, that have actually never done an Ironman before. So when you go to the welcome party and they sort of like say, so who's never done an Ironman before, you'll have to stand up and you'll be the only one, or one of two or three.
Yeah, true. Well, let's hope I finish, so then at least I've done one.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of places in town where you can go and get the tattoo. What do you know about the Kona course then? I mean, you know, it's difficult to train for it around here.
So I know, I've obviously known a lot about it over a long period of time, and I know the swim, well, swim's a swim. Going out onto the bike, it's kind of round town and a bit lumpy, and then you head out on the highway and it's fairly rolling until you get on the slope up to Harvey, however you say it, turn around and come back. I think for me, and something that I worked on anyway for the 70.3 riding is just efficiency at riding at kind of set powers and stuff. And that's something that I'm going to do a bit more, obviously carry on doing in Arizona, and concentrating on the run efficiency at pace and making sure my legs don't kind of fall apart just down to DOMS and getting through into that last half hour. And then, the big thing for Ironman, especially Kona, nutrition and hydration. So, I've got some look boxes of OTE come, not just product placement, that is actually the delivery for the nutrition I need for Kona.
Well, we should give a shout out to OTE, Yorkshire Nutrition Company, Matt Harrison there, one of your sponsors. So we'll see a bit out. Who's going to be looking after the Yorkshire flag for you?
I won't look too far ahead, but going to Arizona, I've got Mark Buckingham and Gordon Benson coming with me to train. And then Gordon is coming with me all the way to Kona.
Is he? Great stuff.
Yeah, he's looking forward to, he's going to do everything, he says, including the underpants run. So he's looking forward to the Kona experience, but he's also going to be there on the day, whatever, giving time splits, bottles, whatever. So, yeah.
Well, I'll have a Yorkshire flag anyway.
Okay.
That I'll keep out on the course just to give you a bit of a lift when you see
Thanks.
It. We're talking about riding with Team Sky. One of the guys you'll be facing in Kona has the course record, Cameron Worth.
Yeah.
Trains with Sky. He's trained by Tim Kerrison, isn't it? Have you spent much time chatting with him at all?
I don't think I've ever met him actually. No. Obviously a super impressive cyclist and super quick on the bike last year. My understanding is the conditions were perfect last year for fast racing and that made a big difference. Following his racing this year, he maybe looks like he's actually riding a bit slower so he can actually run. So maybe that might be a bit different.
I don't know how many races he's done now. I think Tim Hemming told me he's done 19 Ironman races in the last two or three years. He just packs them in.
Yeah,
I did hear him say somewhere that he was doing Ironman Wisconsin, which would have been
last weekend.
Probably. Yeah, so that seems a little close to Ironman for me to do another Ironman, particularly if you want to put on your best performance. You know, I know that you guys are superhuman compared to the rest of us, and you recover pretty quickly, but you're still humans at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things at pro level, especially, I mean, for me, the difference between running whatever a 69.70 and a 67 half marathon at the end of a race is enormous. Like you know, in terms of recovery is not just 50%, like 100% different.
Just for 3 minutes faster.
Yeah, completely different. So yeah, I think in some, you know, being at the top end of your ability as a pro and pushing it, I think it could be even worse actually for people who are really, you know, getting everything out of themselves on the day. And you think you need to be super fit and fast to be able to get all that out. Yeah, it's kind of strange. I always, you know, for example, in terms of Dons, and like, it was harder for me to run a 10K on its own than it was a 10K at the end of a triathlon, because the, at my best, say, whatever that difference was, like 45 seconds or a minute, maybe not even that. But yeah, that difference in 10K meant the recovery was way worse.
Really? That's interesting. And it was, what was it, 28:15 you did in San Diego?
28:30. Yeah.
28:30, yeah. And you weren't far behind that, were you, in London?
Yeah, just over 29. I think if I'd run one in like London area, I would have been a fair bit faster. But that one I literally just turned up and did without kind of training for it.
Hmm. Who else has given you advice then about Kona? And I think you, I saw Will Clark a few weeks ago, and he said you'd been speaking to him a little bit.
Yeah, I've had advice from lots of people. Like everyone, I've been appreciated everyone's two pence worth. My strategy for advice and information has always been listen to everyone and then make sure you decide yourself and take it all in and make an informed decision on it. So yeah, it's good. And I think it's listening about what to do and how to approach it, and then I guess synergizing that with what I know about kind of myself and how I can train and what I'm capable of doing training wise you know, not too much basically or not too little, and where those weaknesses are. And yeah, hopefully I'll arrive there in good position to do all right.
Just a couple of things about the race. I remember being at a press conference a few years ago. I think Norman Stadler was the reigning champion, and somebody asked Faris Al Sultan, you know, what's your strategy for Saturday, Faris? And he said, strategy? I don't have any strategy. If Norman goes hard on the bike, I have to go with him. if I have good legs, I'll be able to hold on to him. If not, then I won't. But that's, there's no strategy. Is that how you see it, or do you think that you can actually have a little bit of a plan?
Yeah, well, there is relative strategy. You know, he could have, Faris could have gone, well, my strategy is just to preempt it and go hard from the start myself. So there is strategy to an extent. I think it'd make sense for me to be relatively cautious, but at the same time, you know, not be over cautious and throw away everything that I've done my whole career in terms of racing wise and being aggressive and trying to be on the front foot. So yeah, I think I'm obviously going to give the race a lot of respect, and I want to be competitive in at the back end. So I'm going to see how it unfolds, and then that'll be my kind of strategy. But yeah, it'll be somewhere between being super aggressive and super not aggressive.
It's a little bit longer to suffer for, isn't it? 8 hours than just under 2 hours.
Well, it's not even suffering at that point, is it? If you go into the red and you're a bit, you know, underhydrated and running a bit short of calories, you know, that's basically ruined your race at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ride to power now? Because I know you never used to.
Yeah, I for ITU training, no, not really. Unless I'm doing a really specific kind of effort block or something. But most of it is still around like what other people are doing and that really kind of ecstatic kind of effort. Yeah, for long distance stuff, I've been pretty specific with the power I'm trying to hold and doing efforts and just trying to train myself to be really comfortable at set kind of race powers and stuff. And then, you know, working off that in races as well.
So everybody's probably listening to this going, go on, Simon, ask him what his FTP is. So
about 400, right?
Yeah. That's your FTP. So yeah. What will your race wattage be? Around 300?
No, for 70.3, I can average 350 for 70.3.
And what about in Kona, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Well, less than 300, probably.
Yeah. Going back to Faris, actually, we had a booth next to Cannondale, who was his bike sponsor, and he had his SRM unit on his handlebars there, and it was all taped up, and I was quite interested in this. So I spoke to the mechanic, and he said, yeah, Faris doesn't like to see his power. And I'm like, well, what's he got it for? He says, well, SRM have this agreement with Training Peaks to show the telemetry and afterwards, and so you can see the power curve. Yeah. And I think Torbjørn Sindbal had the fastest bike that year. Remember him, the Danish guy? And it was showing Faris's power curve and the difference and where he was able to conserve energy to have a better run, which he did, and he won that day. But again, he said, you know, there's no point sticking to power if somebody's going up the road. If you've got the legs, exactly, you have to go over that power. And if you don't, then you're never going to get to it anyway.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of my argument looking at it in Olympic distance racing. I mean, what are you going to do if you're riding up a climb and you're thinking, oh, been above my FTP for the last 20 minutes now, you're not going to slow down, are you? So, yeah, I think, yeah, obviously it is a tool. I think for long distance, it does become very important. But when it comes to it, I still think you've got to use your head in the race situation.
It's your first time in Kona, as you've said. There's an awful lot going on in race week. You know, somebody like you, you're coming in there, reigning Olympic champion, double gold medalist, the man who everybody's wanted to see, you know, now that Javier's done his Ironman there and Frodeno, you're the one that everybody's wanted to see what happens when you step up. So there's going to be a lot of people wanting your time. What are you going to be doing to manage all of that while you're out there?
Yeah, well, I'm going to manage it very carefully. Mostly, that's why I'm going a bit earlier, so I can get most of the stuff I need to do done the week before. I'm okay with that. I've had a bit of experience over the years managing different stakeholders in terms of sponsors and race organisers and media and whatever. Especially, you know, the one thing I think I've conservatively experienced is around the London Olympics, where I think, you know, the pressure on stuff, the pressure both to perform, but the pressure to do stuff was obviously enormous. So, I'm hoping I'll be at least all right on that front.
It's not just that, though, in Kona. You know, you'll be going to the beach now. You can't go to the pool this year because the pool's closed, which is where a lot of the pros tend to hang out and sort of stay out of the limelight. You've not got that option this year, and there aren't really any other pools to swim in Kona. So if you go to the beach, of course, you'll be there. Everybody will be. I can remember when Chrissy went down, you know, there was a huge queue of people waiting to have a photograph with her and try to get her to sign this T-shirt and that book. You don't get that in your races generally, do you, when you do WTS? You're separated a little bit from the age groupers in your training opportunities. So there will be that one to deal with.
Yeah, I'm kind of used to that in life. I mean, even at home, I sometimes can't go to the supermarket without people asking for pictures and stuff. So, I think I'll be okay. I'll stay out the way, try and keep my head down. When I have to go and do things, I'll try and keep my head down and stay out the way of stuff. So, yeah, I think that's a challenge, but hopefully I'll be okay.
You're not going to do the underpants run then?
Not going to do the underpants run, no.
Doing the Huala swim?
I do that, because it just gives me a chance to swim the course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's 6 days before. It's on the Sunday morning.
Yeah.
It's a nice little thing. There's quite a few of the pros do it. You get to, for anything, it's just good to scope out what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Up the course, you know, some landmarks where the sea is. Just get used to it's just getting used to that roll of the ocean, really.
Yeah.
There's not really any waves out there, but it can get a bit choppy.
Yeah.
Last year, everybody was swimming with the dolphins, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. Are you doing it?
Yeah, I'm down. I've done it a few times. Yeah, I won't be troubling you though. I'll just be tootling along the back, admiring the reef and the fish, and trying to stay out of those Daniela Reef jellyfish.
Oh yeah. I hope I don't come across one of them.
I've actually never seen any.
Yeah.
While I've been there, and I've been going since 2002. I've swam in that bay pretty much every day while I've been there. So probably 7 or 8 times each year. I've never even seen a jellyfish.
Yeah.
It was a surprise that she got stung right in the bay there, you know, where all the swimmers have gone in last year. There were a few of the girls said they got stung, but
it takes one rogue jellyfish, I guess, doesn't it?
One rogue. Yeah. Well, listen, Alistair, you've got a busy day. Thanks very much for inviting me over. It's been
all
great,
right,
to
pleasure.
Catch up with you.
Thank you.
And see the next part of your journey.
Mm.
And look forward to seeing you in Kona in a few weeks.
Yeah.
The after party is great, so let's make sure we catch up and have a few beers, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alistair, thanks very much. Have a great Kona.
Yeah, thank you.
And listeners, that was Olympic champion and Ironman virgin Alistair Brownlee sharing his thoughts about recent races and his upcoming experience on the Big Island. Thanks for listening as always, and I'll be back next week with another fantastic guest. Bye for now.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe you'd be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.